Well, today the great Mark Garagos joins me in Adam's Place, and we do a little analysis of Kari Lake. Mr. Garagos tells me about his experience with Steve Bannon, and it is Election Eve. We talk about that and more right after this.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but get it on. Mandate. Get it on. I'm Dr. Drew. Adam Carolla not here today. In his place, the great Mark Garagos.
You know, am I on here?
Because yes, I hear you. Yeah. Your headset need to be turned up or anything?
Yeah, something. I don't
something.
Know.
Something. Follow that
something.
Wire out.
Huh? Yeah.
Well, here he comes running in.
Gary's going to fix it.
Gary's on it. And test 1, 2.
There we are.
Beautiful.
See?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I'm very attuned to bad audio because when I'm traveling, I have apparently the worst audio. In the comments section, they savage Gary and me.
Used to be. We've made
some progress. But I'm going to talk about traveling. Did you go to dinner with my wife and your
wife? I did. We did.
Like, somebody didn't tell me?
No, we did tell you. You were having tacos at your son's place. And I don't know what she communicated to you, but I thought I better stay out of it. I thought I better stay out of it because she was already pissed.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, I know I can call Mark and get him to show, but I don't want to get in the middle of this.
Wow.
We didn't actually have dinner.
We went to the Pendry or something.
We were at the Pendry. We were at Hudson Yards, right? That's where we live. And this whole thing is developed behind Hudson Yards, sort of on the other side of Whole Foods, this little courtyard.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a thing called Zuzu there that we like. Did we eat at Zuzu? Yeah, we ate at Zuzu. And we ate with a friend of ours who came in and went, hey, this place is familiar. What's going on here? Turns out it's part of the chain of quality meats, quality bistro,
quality Italian,
all that stuff. And so, lo and behold, these are things we really love in New York, and it's all the same organization. And we told Paulette, come meet us in the bar at the Pendry, which is connected to Zuzu. So that was it.
Wow. She ding-dong-ditched me, so I'm sure.
That is what she said you did. I swear to Christ. She literally came in and said, Mark ditched me, which is when I decided. I'm not going to get in the middle. But she seemed great, and we had a great time, and we made a plan. This is another reason I'm pissed you weren't there.
Yeah.
Because this is not what I intended to talk about today, by the way.
But
here we are. Because we do have a lot of us to talk about.
By the way, when does this drop?
Monday. So they're on your screen. The Monday, Wednesday, Friday in order.
Okay, so this is Election Eve.
This is Election Eve, and that's the kind of shit I want to get into with you. Maybe we ought to just drop this. But let's just say she and I and Susan agreed there's a trip that needs to happen with the four of us in the springtime.
Did she say where?
Yes.
Where?
I don't want to get too deep into it here. Okay. It's going to seem weird. But you have a place to stay there. And I said, let's stay there.
Well, that doesn't narrow it down.
I know. But I'm going to – and I thought, well, let's just go there. And Paulette and I love this particular city. And we
– Oh, God. I know it. Right. Now I know exactly.
And we need to practice our French.
As Susan will say, go get a room. So
But it's like too long with us not doing that. And
I agree.
Like this
I agree. We haven't gone families since Whistler, and that was a billion years ago.
We skied together with the kids 20 years ago probably.
Wow.
Yeah, it kind of goes fast, doesn't it? Yeah, that's scary when you think about that. But the kids were grade school age, and I don't even think middle school yet.
Yeah, they were – well, Douglas and Jake and Jordan were hilarious. Paulina was the – Paulina, she
isn't
changed.
That the one though where she injured herself on the sled?
Yes, exactly.
And so there you go.
I love it. Wait, so Election Eve?
Yes, let's get into it.
So there's a gubernatorial candidate in Arizona,
Lake.
Yes, Kari Lake. But see, he said it.
You slow rolled it this time, Mark. You're learning.
Because I got kind of. Yeah,
Mark's been
go.
Jumping in every time somebody alludes to her. He's like, Kari Lake.
I couldn't disagree more with her on the issues, but I'm such a fanboy when it comes to the way she interacts with the press.
So I was going to say almost exactly the same thing. I was going to say I don't even know what her position is on things, but I freaking love this woman. She talks to the press the way they should be spoken to by everybody.
It's exactly right. I mean, I remember doing a press conference once. I think it was Chris Brown related. And I was getting asked the most idiotic questions and just went off, kind of like her. And I watch her. Let's Gary's got this up. Gary, do you want to play it? Because this, I think, is a masterclass in how you deal with
this. And by the way, she does this. She drops stuff like this every other day.
Well, if he's got the CNN Plus one.
I can find that one. Yeah.
Oh, that one was awesome. That's a great one. That one, yeah.
Let's watch this one. I'll get that ready.
Chris Finkley from CBS News. Hi, Chris. I don't know if you've seen this ad attacking you.
Which one?
Which one?
Which one, Chris?
The mother of Brian Signe, the Capitol police officer that died the day after January 6th. She, in an attack ad, is saying that people like you specifically are responsible for her son's death. I'm curious what you think when you hear that.
What's her name?
The mother of Brian Sicknick?
Yeah.
I think it's Cindy Sicknick.
Cindy, I just want to say to Cindy Sicknick, I'm so sorry about the death of your son. It is tragic. I'm a mother myself, and that is, it breaks my heart. That is a wound when you lose a child, no matter how old they are, that never heals. And so I don't want to disparage her. She doesn't know me. I wasn't anywhere near the Capitol on January 6th. And I understand that her son died, I think, the following day of a stroke or natural causes. And I feel for her, and I see the pain in her eyes. And I would never try to disparage or hurt her, because I know when a mother has pain like that,
but
there's exactly. No way to heal that. And that's why I feel for these moms and dads who hit me up on the campaign trail, and they grab me. And you can spot them from across the room.
There
is
a loss
in their lives that can never be replaced. And we're losing thousands of young people. When they tell me they lost a son to fentanyl, when they lost a daughter to fentanyl poisoning, this is why we are pushing so hard to secure that border and stop fentanyl from pouring across. I'm used to attack ads. I've had probably more money spent against me than any candidate in Arizona in attack ads. But the people know me here. They're not believing what they're seeing in the attack ads. I've been in their homes for 27 years. And additionally, besides attack ads, I've had 100% negative lying coverage by the fake news of me and my campaign and our people.
Here we go.
And so we've withstood that. And we will win. And we're going to do great things for Arizona, despite what you guys say.
So I don't even know what her policies are, but I think she needs a shot.
Well, right? I'm going to tell you something. The Obama, ex-President Obama said yesterday that it basically if she wins, democracy is over. But they're saying that about everybody. Exactly.
And that's getting old and tired.
Well, people are wondering why. You know, the Democrats, August, September, were starting to get some traction.
Yes.
And then now the pendulum is swinging, and now they're talking – on election eve, talking not a red wave but a red typhoon. Mm-hmm. I wonder why. But
well, my question is, and this reminds me of when Gray Davis was recalled as the California governor. This really reminds me of that, because if you remember,
some of our people will not remember Gray Davis.
Gray Davis was an unpopular governor,
who ushered in the Arnold Schwarzenegger era here in California.
But the reason he was cast out, I'll never forget this because I was sort of part of this feeling. He allowed this quadrupling of the registration fees for cars to go through. It wasn't his fault, but he sort of allowed it to happen. And when people really reacted to it, he essentially said, hey, suck it up. And people went, suck it up? Really? You're out of here. We want you out. And then when people clearly were wanting him out, he said, this is non-democratic. And we all at the time went, really? If we all stand up democratically and vote you out, that's non-democratic? That's insane. And to hear that rhetoric again, it's not going to work for them. It's insane to say when democracy goes against you, it's the death of democracy.
And by the way, I could draw a straight line between Jimmy Carter and gas lines, Gray Davis and car – basically, it's a car tax
yes.
with the DMV.
Yes.
And – Joe Biden, the Democrats, and gas prices.
It's all the same stuff, right?
And you just see history repeating itself.
Yes.
And even our standard bearer here in California, Gavin Newsom, was quoted yesterday bemoaning his party, meaning the Democrats, and rightfully so. I give him credit. He at least has recognized the fact that they've been outmaneuvered, outpivoted at every point.
All right, so now we're gonna. This is where she really established herself as a.
By the way, there's something to be said, and I think part of the reason she's extemporaneous, she's good on her feet.
Yes.
And by the way, when you were saying in the previous clip, she was saying 27 years in your living room. You know who the first thing I thought of?
Colleen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
She should run.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what Colleen's – I mean,
I don't either.
She's our friend.
She's
forever,
always kept very, very – she's very moderate. She's always kept very close to
that. That's what I would think, but it reminds me of Colleen.
Colleen Williams.
And before Colleen, it was Kelly Lang. I mean, they'd been kind of fixtures in L.A. for decades.
Yeah. No, I wish she would. I wish she would because she's
imagine?
So
Colleen
smart and so capable.
So bright. Yeah. And she's got the same – I don't want to call it snarky because that has kind of a negative, but I just love the
smart.
Yeah,
smart. Quick and smart. And this is where she really established herself as a dagger.
Yeah, like and I had an edit that I was going to play, but I'm going to play this one because if you notice the branding on this, this is from her campaign. And at the end, there's a little bit of cheering and it's like a very internet meme. So she has a very good young team with her that understands the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to play that version even though it's a little jarring. I want to point that out to you guys.
Hi,
Yuri.
Hi.
Nice to see you.
You don't have a mask on anymore. What's going on?
Already, right?
Well, we're 6 feet apart.
Do you have a minute to chat?
I'll do an interview.
Okay.
As long as it airs on CNN Plus. Does that still exist? Yeah. I didn't think so, because the people don't like what you guys are peddling, which is propaganda. Thank you.
I don't care. You and we probably tilt against every one of us. But there's a reason why she's being talked about as Trump's running mate for VP.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, because of that stuff.
Apparently, when he did the rally in Arizona, he introduced
Brought her up. That's right. I forgot.
Didn't know who she was, basically, if you believe what's being reported, and was shocked at the reaction of the crowd.
Interesting. So that's where you
which he always considers – you know,
important. Kind
of your bona fides is if the crowd loves you.
He's so strange that way. He likes if you've been on television. That's meaningful to him, which is weird, right? Isn't that weird? That
he like just got this idea. I mean, and by the way, he's picked his lawyers that way. He's picked, you know, his appointments when he was president that way.
Sort of people with public profile. Because weird way, right?
Right. So that's the prism through which he looks.
So Adam and I spent a lot of time trying to figure out why that man creates such a reaction in people. Because I sort of – my reaction to him is I don't care. He either has good policies or he doesn't. He's a blowhard. I got it. He's never been different. I see who he is. But it doesn't – I don't have this reaction. And people get these – I feel like COVID and everything, all the excesses of the last 6 years, I feel like they're all generated by this man. And I don't really understand why. I wonder if you have any insight.
You know, the early on in his campaign before he was elected, I had met with just by chance Steve Bannon.
Mm.
And we had a mutual friend and he introduced me and I had a – couple-hour talk with him. And it's interesting because that was probably 7 years ago. And Bannon had – I always looked at Bannon back then as kind of the Karl Rove to George W. And, you know, people said Trump's brain.
Karl Rove or Cheney?
Well, Cheney as well. I mean, Cheney I always loved because Cheney was put in charge of the vice presidential search and looked high and low and then decided he was the best solution.
Hysterical.
If that happened at your office, you'd say, wait a second here.
Hold on.
Didn't I put you in charge of the search and you're telling me you're the best candidate?
It's too funny.
The Bannon had a worldview when we talked about this kind of right-wing what's now characterized as right-wing populism.
So MAGA-ish, MAGA stuff.
Yeah, and this
what we would call
before,
MAGA, loosely.
This is well before it had become developed at least in kind of the zeitgeist.
And let me – because I really want to drill into that because populism has a sort of a bad connotation. Did he understand that or did he see
and
it?
He wanted to harness it and he had – a you know, globalist is a bad word on to people like him, but he had a more global feel. And it's wild because everything we talked about 7 years ago is coming to pass. I mean, you're starting to see in Europe. You see the what's happening.
You and Bannon. When he's sort of been saying that out loud lately, too.
Yeah.
Like, it's coming. Here it is.
Exactly.
Know?
But he had a kind of a vision 7 or 8 years ago, and I remember thinking at the time, this is wild. And I've watched kind of and by the way, he has kind of parlayed that.
So is he the holding the strings of the marionette, and he pushed Trump upon us as the proper puppet? Or does he have a vision that he just sees unfolding inevitably in the historical landscape?
Well, one of the things about Trump, in my estimation, is that he understands his constituency and his demographic. I mean, when he said years ago, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and I wouldn't lose any votes.
Yeah.
He understood that. He understood. And even if you go back historically, he used to say, when people would ask him if he's going to run 22 years ago, he would say, if I did, I'd have to run as a Republican because they're not as smart. And I mean, he can insult his demographic, but then he gets on the stump. And he does this kind of what I always characterize as the Henny Youngman act.
Yes, it's a comic. It's a stand-up act.
Yeah. And people love it at the rallies. And he fires up the base. And then you see the man on the street type interviews with people who are adherents. And they can't articulate in any – at least the and by the way, for those who are going to write in the comments, yes, I know that goes for the other side as well, but I'm trying to have a cohesive thought here. They can't articulate. It's more emotive, and it's at a level that they
relate to. And I've always kind of thought that because of that very thing and whatever it is he's touching, it's more of a reaction to something rather than a enthusiasm about something.
That's exactly right, because he creates that.
And I don't know what they're reacting to. I almost kind of go back to what I'm beginning to think of as like an Obama derangement syndrome. Like people were deranged about him on the right quietly. We just didn't know it until Trump brought it up.
Well, I remember having lived through McDougal in the 90s. It was that Clinton had the same thing. I mean,
he had a derangement syndrome.
I mean, I'd never seen anything like it. I remember being.
Well, that was because of his affair stuff, and they just used that.
Right, as their proxy for everything else. But
he's a great example of how fucked up that is, because I think he's one of our great administrators of the last 50 years.
And
he was an asshole. Okay, I don't care.
Right. And by the way, what a mind he has.
Yes, and what an asshole he was. And good, he did made some good decisions. I don't care about the assholishness anymore. But I did at the time, interestingly, because I actually, this is the insanity of our present moment as I see it, and I'm trying to look at my own participation in it.
Yeah, so tell me about the Clinton.
So my thing, when he was elected –
Real quick. We got to take a break, and we'll do it right
after. Oh, I'm sorry. We'll do a break. I'll tell you all about my part in this in just a second. And we are back. Mark Garagos goes in from Adam Carolla. This is – sorry, Adam. Well, sorry, Adam fans. This is my favorite Dr. Drew and Adam show. Mark comes in here.
We don't – by the way, this is – exactly how it would be if you were out to dinner with
us.
Right?
Correct. This is exactly what we get into.
Yeah.
But so here I am in whatever year that was.
And 92.
92. My God.
Yeah.
I looked at him and I went, oh, I know this dude. He's an alcoholic sex addict. I know it. And I put a letter in the mail to myself so I could reopen it again in 20 years.
Wow.
And I lost it. And I lost it. But I mailed a letter to myself. It was when he – if you remember this crazy fiasco – remember when he held up LAX to get a haircut on the tarmac?
Yeah, I remember that.
I remember that guy.
The price. The price was like $400.
Right. I said, I know that guy. I see it. I see it on his face. I know him. He's an alcoholic. He's probably sex addict. He didn't know yet about the sex thing, but I had a feeling about it. And I thought, I'm going to write a letter to myself and make a point of this when this goes bad. I was right and I was wrong. It should not have mattered to me. It taught me to – I mean, he screwed up his administration because of that stuff.
Well,
but none of that stuff.
More of his legacy in some ways, but I'll tell you.
He slowed down during all the impeachment hearings. Yeah. If he could have done more for us. And so my thing is like, I should not be caring about the character of that person so much. He suffers more than the people. I need to know that guy's brain and their decision making and the policies that they're espousing. That's what I should care about.
Yeah, and he had great vision as well.
Oh my God.
I mean,
he understood.
You know, if you take his view right now when we're, you know, the Republicans are running on crime again, and mind you, the reason that Clinton was so effective is that in the 80s, you know, we're seeing the 80s all over again.
That's what it feels like.
It's exactly the
80s. It feels coming from a different place, though. The
right.
70s were low. We were down and out.
Well,
we were in college, and remember how we sucked as a country?
Exactly. So the 80s sparked that three strikes movement and the mass incarceration. And you go back and take a look at President Biden back then as a senator.
He was way into this, kind of the
cracking down on crime. And Clinton understood, I mean, and I disagree from my standpoint, but he understood that they had the term triangulation. And he used to kind of do a mental jujitsu. And he was very effective. And he had his kind of foil was Newt Gingrich.
And, oh, yeah. I remember that.
Remember? Yeah. And that played out through the 90s.
Yeah. And I remember Newt came off as a shithead sort of. And I had the chance to interview him years later. And he was much more interesting as a very bright guy,
He's an extremely bright guy. Yeah. He's he was savaged back then and probably rightfully so.
He just had the wrong attitude. His attitude was bad. Didn't seem right.
And I will tell you that we are replaying the late 80s, early 90s now.
So have we not gone too far with some of these policies? Do you agree that where we're at is sort of should be a status quo, or do we need to find a middle ground?
Well, it depends on where you are. I mean, I think Eric Adams, who's the mayor of New York, I've been impressed with some of the things they've done there. I mean, New York's got its issues, but I go back and forth from downtown L.A. to Manhattan. Downtown L.A., as you know, I'm down there. I don't want or like the females who work for me to
They can't.
It's very difficult. They can't walk down the street, and I don't want them to. And every single one of them has been assaulted violently. Yeah. Every single one. Yeah. I mean, it's awful.
But then when people go, well, crime's not up, none of it gets reported. Nothing happens with it. So, of course, the data doesn't reflect
it. And by the way, I watched the thing. Well, if you look at the red states, they've got the highest increase in murder rates. They've got the lowest educational. I get that, but the problem is is the messaging to some degree, and you just open your eyes. If you get off the freeway on Wilshire, you think you've landed in a third world country. Why are people living on the street? And I don't care what anybody says. That is an image that you can't get out of your head, and the messaging is awful.
And seven of them die every day.
What kills me, right?
Yep. It's an open-air hospital without doctors and nurses.
Mental hospital.
Well, medical and mental, and they often go together. Right. And doctors and nurses, not allowed. Not allowed. If it were an actual hospital, open-air or closed facility, and people were dying like that, all those doctors and nurses would be put in jail.
By the way, and going back to Eric Adams, one of the things he's done, and I watched it happen last time I was there, which was in the last 2 weeks, he's got like a group that responds.
Yes.
And there's a social worker.
Yeah.
There's a cop.
They've always done a better job. Guess what? And here's what they do. They take people who are suffering and they put them somewhere and they help them.
Yeah.
California, you are not allowed to get near them.
Well, we have perverted the Petrus Lannerman Act. I mean, it is
beyond.
It's been turned inside out.
Poor, so this is the thing.
Poor Lannerman, if he was around.
Oh my God, he went to his deathbed worried about this. He failed with it. And what we have basically
he was an assembly member who actually was in Flint Ridge, I think, because the Lannerman Auditorium is named after him.
And he developed the policies that really most states developed around 72-hour holds, the 5150 at the time, and. The thing that has been has happened in California that people don't appreciate is the notion of gravely disabled. which used to be a really serious – that's what allowed us to treat people. They were sick and disabled. We could treat them. Gone. You cannot – does not exist, gravely disabled. And you have to be actively suicidal with a plan in the moment you're asked about it or actively homicidal, have a place to get food and sleep, and that's it. So if you go, oh, I was just kidding. I didn't really want to kill that guy. And I can get $3 at the freeway right now if I stand there, and I'll go to McDonald's across the street, and my tent is over there on Fifth. That's it.
So you're done.
You can't get near them. What's astonishing to me, Mark, is that the people in Sacramento seem not to understand what they've done. I did a documentary on homelessness with the Salvation Army, and I it's been making the rounds in some of the
what's the title
festivals and stuff. Look up Salvation Army Drew Homelessness. It's shit. I can't remember the name. We'll get it in a second.
Okay.
And it's doing well, and it's a very dramatic, obviously, thing. And we talk about what's happening, what should be done and stuff. And I was talking to the woman that spearheaded the whole thing, and I just thought, I'm so tired. It's sickening to me. I just can't do it anymore. I said to her just in passing, I said, what is up with them? Why can't they? And she just screamed back at me. She goes, it's a religion. It's a religion for them. This is a religious orientation, and it cannot be adjusted in any way. And I thought, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
You know, there is something to be said for that, because it's astonishing to me to look at this. I mean, it just – when you see it and then when you encounter, which I do practically on a daily basis, every time you think you've gotten used to it, you realize you haven't, because you see somebody who's in complete distress, obviously – out of their mind, you know, kind of.
And then you have a governor standing up going, the face of homelessness is the mom of three who lost her job. Like, really? Where? Where? Show her to me. It's not that guy. And by the way, these are all my patients. I know how to treat these people. I know what can be done. I treated it for 30 years. I know what you do with this. It's not hard, but you have to do it. You have to ask something of these people. The documentary is called Beyond Homelessness.
Beyond Homeless, Finding Hope.
And
I want to remind everyone, don't miss Wednesday or Friday this week, because Mark's going to be with us all week, and it's going to be like one long conversation spread over 3 days.
That, and we're going to get some calls, and we've got a lot more to talk about. We're trying to make sense of things.
We are trying to make sense of things, and I've got on Wednesday, even though it's the day after Election Day, I do want to talk about the physician misinformation law.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. Let's start with that.
Yeah.
AB 2098 on Wednesday. We'll see you all next time.